Willie had a good reason for not being where I thought he'd be. "I couldn't hear you, Mac," he said. "Are you hurting?" Was I ever? I told Steve Fuller to be ready. Eventually, I couldn't take it any longer. I went in and tried to urinate. Like grape juice. I was bleeding internally. I jumped right in the shower. I must have stayed there for an hour, because I knew where I was going, I wouldn't shower for a week. I was headed to the hospital for a prolonged visit. "What's the score?" I asked the ambulance driver on the way. "You're up 17-6 in the fourth quarter," he said. It's the one thing that made me feel good. Jim McMahon. McMahon, the bare truth about Chicago's brashest bear. Chapter 1. The Super Bowl Shuffle. In the winter of 1986, in a manner I won't bother to go into, I came into possession of two tickets to Super Bowl XX. The Chicago Bears, the monsters of the Midway, would play the New England Patriots in the Superdome in New Orleans. I was a senior in high school, and this was my first great Chicago team, the Bears having last won a title in 1963, half a decade before I was born. The Chicago Cubs had last taken the World Series in 1908, when my Grandpa Morris was walking behind a mule in Poland. I'd gotten permission to miss school to attend the game on the ruse that this would in fact be an informational visit to Tulane University, with a side trip, because I'll be there anyway, to the Super Bowl. But I found it impossible to secure passage. It seemed as if half the city, experiencing the once-in-a-generation delirium of victory, was heading south. Every seat on every flight was sold, as was every seat on every train. When my parents refused to let me drive, I toyed with the idea of running away, lighting out, thumbing it. At the last moment, salvation came via a woman in my mother's office who knew some fans who had chartered a plane. They called it the Winged Bear, for the trip to New Orleans. There were still a few seats in the main cabin, which is how my friend Matt Lederer and I came to leave for O'Hare Airport in our Jim McMahon jerseys. I'm not sure what I expected. A Learjet with a dozen Northside business types, perhaps, or a DC-3 filled with a football-loving Boy Scout troop. We instead found ourselves seated in a tired L-1011, with a Kodiak bear painted on the tail, the rows packed with a few hundred fans of the cartoon variety, huge beer-swilling Southsiders with the sort of mustaches that suggest virility. Every one of them wore either a team jersey or the type of Bears sweater vest favored by Coach Mike Ditka. The seats were as stuffed as the Knishes at Manny's Deli near Maxwell Street. Beers were distributed, Mickey's, Budweiser, Schlitz, and the nasal voices rang with, "We're gonna murder 'em," guarantees. It was 4 p.m., and some of these men had been drinking for 6 hours. The flight attendants, in orange and blue aprons, got us seated for takeoff, but the big fat men started unbuckling soon after. They wandered in the aisles, slurring and prophesying. One made his way to the lavatory as the plane was in steep ascent. It was like watching a ball roll up Mount Everest. A stewardess ordered him back to his seat. "Lady," he said, "I'm full of sausage and beer. It's out of the way or a big mess." Footballs were taken out of bags and spirals went zipping across the cabin. Several people were hit in the head mid-sentence or mid-beer. A punt banged off an emergency door handle. I envisioned the headline. Beery Bears fans sucked to tragic doom. Free-for-all gave way to pandemonium. 300 Chicagoans blowing off decades of frustration. It was beautiful and terrifying. The pilot issued a warning. When this was ignored, he came out of his cockpit in the stern way of a parent, but was driven back by a shower of empties. The rabble were led by a handful of guys from Bridgeport and Pullman. If you could morph their faces into a single face, it would be big and pink and filled with mischievous joy. They stood through the landing and sang as we touched down.